The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Got Dr. Brittany Dean on Zoom. Hello, Doctor.
Hi, Tusker. It is so great to be here today. Yes, I'm on Zoom, but we do have a very interesting topic to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And this entire week, we've been talking about things like anemia or sickle cell anemia. So we are in those blood disorders. And somebody actually asked me yesterday about blood clots in the body. So today we are going to be talking about blood clots in the body. Is clotting important for our health? How do we know when it becomes dangerous? And what are the different management methods or the different complications that can arise from blood clots? So, you know, while we are talking about this specific topic, we also answer any of the medical questions. So feel free to call in, ask your medical questions, send it on WhatsApp, and we can have a discussion about it.
Mm-hmm. So the questions coming in, well, the first one, what are blood clots and why are they important to understand?
So first of all, in terms of blood clots, you know, these are actually sort of semi-solid masses of blood that form when different blood components sort of clump together or stick together. So we have things, different things in the blood, like the red blood cells and the white blood cells, and things like the platelets and different proteins called fibrin. When all of these things clump together, it forms sort of a semi-solid mass, and that is what we call a blood clot. Now, normally in our body, clotting is very much a vital process because that is what stops bleeding when we get a cut or an injury, or basically when we fall down, scrape our knee, and it starts to bleed. Clotting is what causes that bleeding to stop, and that is how our body heals in time. However, when clots start to form inside of the blood vessels without any type of injury, that is when things become bad or things become negative, because that clotting without injury in our blood vessels, that can block blood flow to our vital organs, and that can then lead to serious medical emergencies. So we definitely see clotting leading to heart attacks, strokes, or even blockages in the lungs known as pulmonary embolism. Remember, if we have a blockage or a clot blocking our blood vessels, we're not going to have that blood flow to our vital organs. If we don't have that blood flow to our vital organs, then our organs are not getting the oxygen and the nutrients that it needs to be efficient. Now, understanding clotting of our blood or blood clots in general is crucial because they can actually develop very silently, and very quickly it can become life-threatening. For example, a clot in the veins of the legs, and that is known as a deep vein thrombosis, that can quickly travel to the lungs, causing a blockage in the lungs, and that can lead to sudden death in people. So it is very important for persons to know about blood clots, the signs and symptoms of different blood clots, and early detection and prevention is definitely key to avoiding the complications of these blood clots.
All right, folks, good afternoon. Bass is joining in to the Lunchtime Doctor. We're talking about blood clots today. All right, so of course, feel free to message us with any of your medical questions at 625-2257. We always, you know, take a break in between at least twice to answer your questions, even though it's not related to the topic. 625-2257, 306-1065. Remember, we're here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, and Sky 99.5. So I guess you would have talked about what are blood clots and why are they important to understand. What about the most common causes of blood clots and how do they form in the body?
So in a normal person's body, in a person who is healthy, lives a well-balanced life, now our clotting is actually a balance. So there's a balance in our body between clotting and anti-clotting mechanisms. Now, blood clots actually form when that balance between the clotting and the anti-clotting becomes disrupted. So there are different causes that can cause this balance to become disrupted. And some of the most common causes we definitely see would be things like if somebody is in an immobile position for a prolonged time. So somebody who is sitting down for a long flight, or somebody who is on bed rest after surgery. And what tends to happen in these persons is that the blood flow becomes slower. And when the blood flow becomes slower, that is going to encourage all these blood components to sort of clump together, or basically sort of stick together and form that blood clot. Now, other causes would be if somebody has some sort of trauma to the blood vessel, or certain infections, or even surgical trauma, that can also trigger clot formation because it activates our body's clotting systems. Now, we also have to look at certain medical conditions that people may have that make them more prone to clotting. So things like cancer or heart disease and even autoimmune disease, all of these diseases actually increases the risk of clotting because it causes some sort of inflammation in our blood vessels, causing injury to the blood vessels. And that injury causes the blood to sort of slow down, leading to clotting mechanisms in the blood. Now, we also have to look at who can be more prone to clotting, men or women. Sometimes there are the hormonal factors from pregnancy or even the birth control pills that make women more prone to clotting because of certain factors like the hormones or the hormones that are in the pill themselves. Now, the clot actually forms when platelets, and platelets are the factors that are responsible for clotting, as well as certain proteins called fibrin, when they clump together. And sometimes when they start to clump together, they start to trap the other blood components like the red blood cells and the white blood cells. And that actually creates a plug to seal the damaged vessel. Now, in the absence of an injury, what tends to happen is that that process is not going to block an injury because there's no injury there. What it's going to block instead is the normal blood flow. And depending on where that blockage occurs, it's going to cause different complications. So if it occurs in the heart, it's going to cause a heart attack. If it occurs in the brain, it's going to cause a stroke. If it occurs in the lungs, it's going to cause a pulmonary embolism. So it is really dependent on where this blockage is occurring. The complication is dependent on that.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, of course, we're talking about blood clots today. And what is the difference between a healthy blood clot and a dangerous one?
So when we hear the word blood clot, we tend to think that that is something negative and that's something that is going to cause negative complications. But in fact, clotting is actually a normal mechanism and a defense mechanism for our body. So a healthy blood clot forms as part of our body's natural healing process. For example, when a blood vessel becomes injured, if you cut yourself, a clot is going to form at the site of the injury so that you're not hemorrhaging, you're not bleeding profusely, and it also helps in preventing any sort of infection from getting into the body. And these clots, they usually dissolve on their own once that blood vessel has become healed. And that is a very protective mechanism of our body that is essential for us to survive. Now, on the other hand, we have to talk about the dangerous blood clots. And that dangerous blood clot actually forms without an injury present. And it is going to occur inappropriately within the blood vessel. And these clots, they have a specific name. We usually call them thrombi. And they can block the blood flow to critical areas like the brain, the heart, or the lungs. For example, Like I said before, a clot in the brain can cause a stroke, while a clot that breaks off and travels to the lungs, that can result in a pulmonary embolism. Now, unlike these dangerous clots can actually grow in size, and it leads to more life-threatening complications if it is not treated promptly.
You know, sometimes you would see somebody by their leg, they would have this very dark spot, you know? Could that be considered a blood clot? Yeah.
So depending on that person's history, that can be a blood clot in the legs. But there are other reasons why you may have hyperpigmentation of the legs. So we really have to look at, is that person prone to blood clots? What in their medical history is going to tell us that? And of course, if the person has comorbidities like high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, all of these things can lead us to prove that this could possibly be a deep vein thrombosis or a clot in the vein of the legs. And yes, it is going to cause different symptoms like hyperpigmentation, swelling of the legs. Some people may get pain. All of these different things can be a result of a clot.
All right, and can you explain the terms deep vein thrombosis, or DVT for short, and pulmonary embolism, and how are they related?
So these are actually very important topics that we need to discuss. And the thing is, a lot of people don't even know that they have them, but they are fairly common in a percentage of our population. And I actually did a study on pulmonary embolism a while back, and it was quite a number of persons being diagnosed with pulmonary embolism and having sudden death because of pulmonary embolism. Now, a deep vein thrombosis is actually a condition where blood clots form in the deep veins of our legs. Yes, it can form in the deep veins anywhere in the body, but most typically it's formed in the legs, and that could possibly be due to how gravity is going to pull down the formation of that clot, etc. And this deep vein thrombosis, or this clot in the deep veins of the legs, that can occur because of several different factors. We talked about prolonged immobility, even dehydration, or an injury to that vein in the leg. All of these things can lead to DVTs. And in women, we see women who are on the oral contraceptive pill, or the OCPs, being more prone to DVTs, as well as a state of pregnancy because of the hormonal influences. A lot of women will spend some time on bed rest. All of these different things, especially if you've had some sort of major surgery and you're on bed rest for a long period of time. And like I said before, certain medical conditions like cancer and autoimmune diseases, all of these things make you more prone to clotting. And we do see a lot of these people being diagnosed with DVTs. And the common symptoms that we do see, like you rightfully said, you know, hyperpigmentation of the legs, swelling, pain, warmth of the legs, and redness in the affected leg. And in some cases, DVTs may not even have noticeable symptoms. Now, how does that relate to a pulmonary embolism? A pulmonary embolism is when a clot is in the lungs itself, and that is going to cause its own host of symptoms. Now, the pulmonary embolism actually occurs when a piece of that blood clot, usually from a deep vein thrombosis, breaks off and travels through the bloodstream to the lungs. And this blockage of that blood flow in the lungs can cause their own symptoms. So it will cause things like chest pain, shortness of breath, and some people may even start coughing up blood. And in a lot of cases, that is going to cause sudden death, because this person is no longer having any sort of oxygenation to the proper parts of their body that are essential for life. And DVT and PEs, they're often grouped together as what we call a venous thromboembolism, or VTE, because they are very much closely linked. So recognizing and treating a deep vein thrombosis early is very much critical to preventing a pulmonary embolism in the long run.
All right, folks, so we're getting ready in a short while to take some of your calls and your questions on any medical topics. Any of your medical questions at 625-2257, or we could start the ball rolling at 3061065. Right, 3061065. WhatsApp us. Remember, you could also message your friends at Sangit 106.1 and Sky 99.5, and they will send the questions right to us right here in studio. So one more. What are the risk factors of developing blood clots, and are some people more prone to them than others?
So we definitely do have several risk factors that we have to look at that will increase, you know, the risk of developing blood clots. And we mentioned a few of them before, you know, that prolonged immobile phase, such as, you know, during your long flights, hospital stays, or even bed rests, those tend to slow the blood flow and it will increase your clotting risk. And that is why, especially if a woman is on the oral contraceptive pill and she's going to go on a long flight, we usually suggest that during the flight, she gets up, she takes a walk up and down when it's, of course, safe to do so, up and down the cabin, so that she does not increase her risk of getting a blood clot later on. Then we look at the medical conditions that can increase somebody's risk for blood clots. Things like obesity and cancer and heart disease, all of these can elevate the risk of a blood clot. So hormonal changes as well. So during pregnancy, the use of birth control pills, hormone replacement therapy, all of these can also increase the body's clotting tendency, particularly, of course, in women. And people also with a family history of blood clots or genetic clotting disorders, they are definitely more prone to blood clots than the average population. Older adults, we definitely see that they have a greater risk, because as you get older, your blood flow is going to slow down a little bit, and most older adults, they may have more frequent health conditions. So it is important for the public to be aware of these factors, especially for those who fall into the high risk categories, so that they know the symptoms, the signs to look out for, and when they need to go and get themselves medically assessed.
All right, folks, so let's get some of your questions rolling inside for the lunchtime doctor.
Good day, doctor. A year ago, I was rushed into hospital and it was discovered I had an embolism in my lungs. And then they saw that I had a DVT in my left arm, right? So the DVT traveled to the lungs. And after it was found out that I have a protein C deficiency, can you give me some more information on that protein C deficiency and tell me how, is it possible that it might affect my children also? Thank you.
Right. So as we're seeing here, this caller, she actually had a clot in a DVT in her arm, which is something that we don't particularly see. We usually always see it in the legs, but she had it in her arms and it traveled to her lungs. Now, her having a protein C deficiency is actually a genetic disorder, and that is going to increase the risk of developing all these abnormal blood clots. Now, protein C is naturally something in our body that we call an anticoagulant, and that helps to regulate the blood clotting by inactivating certain clotting factors. Without enough protein C, the body's ability to clot properly becomes impaired, and that is going to lead to a higher risk of clot formation, especially in the veins, especially in your deep vein thrombosis, and of course that can also lead to a higher risk of pulmonary embolism as well. So people with protein C, the symptoms we definitely see would be that deep vein thrombosis, pulmonary embolisms, sometimes strokes, and sometimes unexplained pregnancy complications. So in terms of your treatment, you may have been put on anticoagulation therapy, things to help you bleed a little more, or to help your clotting factors be more efficient. So medications like the warfarin, blood thinners like heparin, or other new anticoagulants that may be used to reduce your risk of clotting. And in terms of management of your clots in the hospital, they would have done things like breaking down the clots or even surgically removing them. And of course, you are going to need lifelong monitoring because you're going to need that lifelong anticoagulant therapy, especially during your high-risk periods like surgery or pregnancy. And because it is a genetic disorder, there is a possibility to pass it on to your children.
Take a call there, Doc. All right. Hello, good afternoon. Thanks for holding.
Hi, Will.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor.
Yes. Hello.
Yes, I had a stroke due to a blood clot in my neck, and I had surgery, but I'm okay now. It was a slight, the doctor said it was a stroke. Are we only talking about clots?
You can ask any question.
Okay. I can't lift my both arms. It's painful, really painful. I took off my radio. I don't know why I'm getting this feedback. Yeah, I can't lift up my arms. I can't comb my hair. I can't hardly take off my clothes, put on my clothes. I can't do those things. It's so painful. And I have to sleep like a dead man. I can't go on the side. It really pains.
Okay.
Is there help for me?
Right. So what I would say is that, you know, if you are feeling pain and weakness in both arms, that can be due to several different things. The most common thing that we definitely will see would be if you have a pinched nerve in the neck. So if you have some sort of compression or irritation of the nerves in the neck, that can sometimes cause pain and weakness in both of your arms. And there are other syndromes that we also look out for as well. What I definitely do suggest is that if it is that severe, you need to go and get yourself assessed by a doctor. They will be the ones who will know your medical history. They will know, do you have any history of nerve pain? Do you have any history of diabetes? All of these things can lead.
I have diabetes. The doctor said, I have been to the doctor, I'm in a clinic too, that I have no, in the knee, what you have in the knee that causes
osteoarthritis.
I can't remember the word. That sponge between the bones, how you call that? The sponge.
The cartilage?
Yes, they said the cartilage is gone in both arms due to work.
Due to?
Too much work when I was younger. I used to work a lot, like painting and scrubbing and all these kind of vigorous activities.
So this is going to be a cause. The main thing that we have to look at is that you may possibly be having osteoarthritis, and that is usually the most common cause of cartilage loss, especially in older adults, and it can be due to all the different types of works that you were doing in your younger days. Now, we also have to bear in mind that osteoarthritis, you know, once, you know, you lose that cartilage, unfortunately, it cannot come back. But there are things that you can do to help remedy the pain and the weakness in both arms. So you definitely want to be doing some hot and cold therapy. You can use a warm compress, a heating pad, to relax any sort of stiff muscles, improve your blood circulation. Use some ice packs, cold compresses to reduce any swelling or numb the area and provide some sort of relief from the joint inflammation. You may want to also try to implement low-impact exercises and stretching or strengthening exercises, and a physiotherapist may be best to help you with that.
So hard to even reach the light switch or to comb your hair, nothing, everything.
Right. So you need to start implementing certain practices in your daily life so that you can help alleviate the pain. Even things like omega-3 fatty acids in your supplementation, those things have been proven to help the anti-inflammatory effects. It can help to reduce your joint pain and the stiffness as well.
Get some other questions coming in there, some other calls at 625-225-1065, and we return to our topic of blood clots. Hi, good afternoon. I was just going out of your topic, okay? Out of my 10 toenails, only two of them are clear and looking normal. The rest is dark brown to black and kind of deformed. That is like that more than 20 years and it's not changing. 20 years?
Okay. So it could be a result of many different things. It could be maybe you've had some sort of trauma to the foot, but more than likely, it could be a fungal infection, because that can cause your toenails to become discolored, thickened, brittle, and it may even become dark or black. So you need to go and get it assessed by your doctor. You can even go to your local health center. They may prescribe some sort of antifungal medications, either topically or orally, and that can lead to permanent nail damage. If you've had it for years, more than likely the damage has become permanent, but I do suggest that you go and still get it checked out so that you don't have any sort of systemic effects from it.
All right, so a call coming in. Let's take this call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Sometimes just my hand is just twist up just so. And it's still long with pain, and it's still long to stop.
It could be a result of many different things. Remember, all of these causes is going to be dependent on somebody's medical history. If you have diabetes or high blood pressure,
yes,
all of these things have, right, all of these things have been proven to have some sort of effect on our nerves as well. So are you experiencing peripheral neuropathy, meaning that you may get some pain, weakness in the arm, or are you experiencing something else like osteoarthritis, and that can lead to some sort of joint instability? So if that is the case, if you do have diabetes, you need to make sure that your blood glucose is under proper blood sugar control, and you need to make sure that your pressures are within the normal range. So if you have been prescribed medication, make sure you're taking your medication, make sure you're taking your blood sugar readings every day, and make sure that you are keeping with your doctor's appointments, because that is when you will know if they are going to tailor your medication because you're not getting any relief, etc. So it can be a host of many different things, but it could also be related to your comorbidities. So definitely, I think that you should have your blood sugar readings in a log and make sure that you are taking them to your doctor every time you go.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Doc, we're going to take a short break and we'll come back with a topic and some more of your questions, folks. Keep it locked to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Your eyesight is everything. Let the experts at Dalton Brown Optometrists take care of it for you. They are the highest quality technology to provide a range of eye exams such as pathology screening, visual field testing, glaucoma screening, and much more. Just ask. They'll also provide a range of stylish and practical spectacles, frames, and sunglasses for all ages, and soft contact lenses, colored contact lenses, and hard contacts. All to meet your needs. Contact Dalton Brown Optometrist today at 667-3115 for your consultation. Visit them on social media at Dalton Brown Optometrist and check out their locations at the corner of Queen and Sozano Street, Arima.
This holiday season, Freedom 106.5 is your holiday companion with the taste of Trini Christmas. We are here to fill your home with the warmth and delicious aromas of the season. Each day, we'll bring you festive recipes that'll make your Christmas meals and memories unforgettable. Whether you're hosting a holiday feast or simply baking some sweet treats, we've got you covered with classic flavors, secret tips, and some fun holiday twists. Don't miss Taste of Trini Christmas on Freedom 106.5 FM. Compliments of Lotus, the confidence to create, and Command Performance. Powerful nutrition for active dogs.
Your eyesight is everything. Let the experts at Dalton Brown Optometrists take care of it for you. They are the highest quality technology to provide a range of eye exams such as pathology screening, visual field testing, glaucoma screening, and much more. Just ask. They'll also provide a range of stylish and practical spectacles, frames, and sunglasses for all ages and soft contact lenses, colored contact lenses, and hard contacts. All to meet your needs. Contact Dalton Brown Optometrist today at 667-3115 for your consultation. Visit them on social media at Dalton Brown Optometrist and check out their locations at the corner of Queen and Sojano Street, Arima.
Hey, are you looking to elevate your wellness game? Say hello to Nubria. Nubria is the research-driven nutritional supplements brand dedicated to unlocking your best self with a blend of science and innovation. Nubria helps you achieve peak daily wellness. Because when your mind and body work in perfect harmony, there's no limit to what you can achieve. Visit your pharmacy and ask for Nubria. Your journey to optimal health starts today. Our brand range includes Focus, Drift, Mood, and more. Nubria. Science. Innovation. Wellness for mind and body.
Join Freedom 106.5 FM for live ball-by-ball coverage of the 2024 ExxonMobil Guyana Global Super League.
It's up in the air.
November 26th to December 6th as five teams battle for glory and $1 million in prizes. Guyana Amazon Warriors, Lahore Calanders, Hampshire Hawks, Rangpur Riders, and Victoria. Who will take it all? Remember, live cricket action of the ExxonMobil Guyana Global Super League on Freedom 106.5 FM.
All right, folks, so we're back at your lunchtime, Doctor, 12:36 on time. We'll be taking another break for some of your calls, but let's return back to our topic of blood clots. So what are some, Doc, of the warning signs and symptoms of a blood clot in the legs or the lungs?
So it's very important for persons to recognize what are the warning symptoms and what are the signs of these particular diseases. So a blood clot in the legs, the DVTs, that will often present us with swelling, pain, and tenderness in one leg, usually in the calf area or the thigh. And when we take a look at the two calves, the one that is affected is usually much bigger than the other. And the affected area may also feel warm to touch and appear reddish or even discolored. Now, if you notice the symptoms, you know, you may, particularly if you've had like that period of immobility, it is definitely important for you to seek medical attention promptly. Now, a blood clot in the legs, in the lungs, while it can result from a blood clot in the legs, that has more dramatic symptoms. So when you have that blood clot in the lungs, you may get sudden shortness of breath. You may get chest pain that worsens with deep breaths. And you may even get coughing. Sometimes you may be coughing up blood and you may have a very rapid or irregular heartbeat. And a pulmonary embolism or that blood clot in the lungs is actually a medical emergency that is going to require immediate treatment to prevent any sort of fatal complications. So it is very imperative that you always take these symptoms seriously and consult your doctor if you are experiencing them.
Mm-hmm. And how can lifestyle factors like prolonged sitting or dehydration contribute to blood clots?
So prolonged sitting, especially during long flights or working at a desk for extended periods, that is going to slow the circulation of the blood, especially in the legs. When the blood flows slower, it is easier for those clots to form. It's easier for all those blood components to sort of clump together, particularly in those deep veins. Similarly, dehydration is going to thicken the blood, increasing the likelihood of clotting. Remember yesterday, we spoke about blood viscosity, and we talked about how normal blood is going to flow through our veins and our arteries, like how water flows through a pipe. But if that pipe becomes, or that water becomes immersed with a lot of sludgy material, it is going to basically make that water stagnant, and it's going to make it much easier for all those components in that sludgy water to clump together and form a blockage in that pipe. Now, to reduce the risk, it's very important that you stay hydrated and you are regularly moving. So simple measures like getting up, stretching every hour, flexing your ankles, and walking, those can significantly lower your risk of blood clots. And drinking plenty of water will also help to maintain that healthy blood flow, particularly when you're traveling and when you have periods of inactivity.
And how are blood clots diagnosed, and what tests are commonly used?
So blood clots are usually diagnosed with a combination of your medical history, a physical exam, and of course, other diagnostic tests that we will perform. So we are going to look out for symptoms like swelling or pain or warmth in the leg and signs of shortness of breath and chest pain for persons who we are suspecting have a pulmonary embolism. And then after we do your medical history, which will tell us if you are at a high risk for blood clots, and after we do that physical examination, which will show us all of the different signs and symptoms of blood clots, then we are going to perform certain tests, like a D-dimer blood test. And that is going to detect elevated levels of those protein fragments that are produced when blood clots are broken down. And then there are imaging tests that we can also perform, such as an ultrasound for the DVT. So we'll actually do an ultrasound on the affected leg to look for the blockages in those deep veins of the legs. And we may even do what we call a CTPA, or a CT pulmonary angiogram, where we look at the blood vessels of the lungs to if we are suspecting this person has a pulmonary embolism. So this is going to confirm the presence and the location of a clot. And an accurate diagnosis is definitely critical for effective treatment of these different clotting diseases.
And what are the treatment options for blood clots, and how effective are they?
So the treatment for blood clots, that is going to typically involve the medications, like I mentioned before, known as anticoagulants, or what we commonly say are blood thinners. And that is going to prevent clots from growing larger and reducing the risk of new clot formation. So people who have experienced blood clots before, they may be very versed in what their blood thinners are. So the common options, so people may recognize things like warfarin or heparin, or there are even newer direct oral anticoagulants as well. And these medications are very much highly effective when they're taken as prescribed. In severe cases, particularly with large clots, then we look at thrombolytic therapy, and those are what we call the clot-busting drugs. So they basically break up clots, and then there are even surgical interventions that we perform to remove the clots that may become necessary when other interventions do not work. And then there are other things that we prescribe to patients who have had DVTs or other clots. So things like the compression stockings and even lifestyle changes such as regular exercise. All of these can aid in a person's recovery and prevent the reoccurrence of these blood clots.
And are there any long-term complications of untreated or recurrent blood clots?
So especially when somebody has a blood disorder, for example, the person who had protein C deficiency, she may be prone to other clots if she does not take her blood thinning medication properly. And those may be very recurrent in somebody's system when they have these blood disorders. So those untreated or recurrent blood clots can actually lead to very serious and potentially life-threatening. For example, the clot in the legs, the DVTs, that can lead to something called post-thrombotic syndrome. And that is actually a chronic condition where a person may have swelling, pain, and skin discoloration in the affected leg. And that post-thrombotic syndrome can significantly reduce that person's quality of life and may even lead to permanent disability. So in cases of something like a pulmonary embolism, those untreated clots can cause long-term damage to the lungs and can even cause a strain on the heart. And it can potentially lead to a chronic pulmonary hypertension. And that condition is going to make it very difficult for the heart to pump blood effectively throughout the body. And that is going to result in heart failure. So preventing and treating clots promptly, that is very essential in avoiding those very severe outcomes that can be life-threatening to persons who are experiencing recurrent or untreated clots.
All right, folks, let's get back to some of your calls and your messages. Right here, hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor.
Blessed to you, Doc.
Well, good afternoon.
It's like every house, somebody in every house in this country has diabetes.
Yes.
That's a sad thing, though. I noticed too late, and this is high risk of this, but this is because listening to brand manufacturers, see, uses a lot of juice, but 0% sugar or 50% sugar less. So that is good news. So people take stock now, and thanks again, Doc.
Okay.
All right, yeah, man, stay away from the juice. All right, so let's see. Somebody asked a question. It's a strange question. What are the precursors of undesirable clothing?
I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure. I don't think that's a medical question.
Yeah. I have a little bump on my vagina about a year now. It's a little big now and it hurts on the lips. What can I do?
Well, I will definitely suggest that you go to your gynecologist first and foremost, because you never know what it is. It could be something as small as just a razor bump, and that could be becoming infected, and that can lead to a cyst or an abscess very quickly. So I definitely suggest that you go to your gynecologist. There are different situations or different factors that we have to consider. Is it a Bartholin cyst? It may appear as a small painless lump at first, but then if it becomes infected, it can become very painful and swollen, forming an abscess. It could be an ingrown hair. It could be a result of a sexually transmitted infection. There are many things that we have to consider, and I don't know your medical history, so I can't just say that you can do something in particular. You need to go to your gynecologist and get properly assessed.
All right. But, Doc, what is it? I mean, with people, they would have these, anything abnormal in your body for a long period of time, go to the doctor, go see, get some medical attention about it.
You know, I actually had a conversation with somebody the other day, and they said that they don't like to go to a doctor because I think one of their friends went to a doctor, and right after they went to the doctor, they passed away. And the you know, there's a notion that some people may think that the doctors do more harm than good, but you also have to consider why did that person, or they would usually say the person has never gone to the doctor before, but they went to the doctor and then a few weeks later they passed away. The fact that the person went to the doctor in the first place means that whatever they had got so severe and so complicated that the doctor probably could not have done much for them in that very short space of time. But if you had gone when you first noticed the symptoms, then you would not have been in that position. So it really is about making the right decisions. People tend to go to the doctor when things get very severely complicated.
Yeah, exactly. Like the man who's messaging me about, you're seeing your nails disfiguring for 20 years. 20 years. And you would not go to see a doctor or go to get it checked out? I mean, come on, people. All right, hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good day. Good day, Liz. Good day to
you. Good afternoon.
Yeah, I don't know if you are in a position to pronounce on this, but yes, I've been diagnosed. They said what they call something that they call herniated disc. You know, as a man, you're back pain, but you still can play a sport. I was playing my sport. I was not being affected in a major way, right? Because I was always athletically inclined. So I used to play a sport doing my gym and everything. And recently now, I was 50, and I get some severe pain. All right?
Okay.
Now, can this be corrected by any follow-on surgery?
Yes, so there are several surgeries that can be considered, of course, depending on the severity of the herniated disc, depending on the person, if they can go through surgery. There's even minimally invasive surgery where the surgeon is going to remove the herniated portion of the disc to relieve the pressure on the nerves. There's even a procedure in which part or all of the damaged disc becomes removed. And in some cases, you know, they may even fuse the vertebrae together to provide stability if there is some sort of extensive damage to the disc. So I would suggest that if you are considering that, then you need to go to the doctor who diagnosed you with the herniated disc, and they will refer you to one of the spinal surgeons. And the spinal surgeons will, of course, give you more information on that, tell you if you are eligible for the surgery, depending on your risk factors, etc. But in the meantime, you want to practice good posture when you're sitting or standing. Avoid lifting any sort of heavy objects, or if you have to lift, you know, use proper lifting techniques, engage in proper physical activity. And when I say that, I mean probably get a physiotherapist on board in terms of your regular exercise regimes in order to strengthen your back and your core muscles. And of course, you need to maintain a healthy weight as well to reduce that stress on your spine.
All right, let's get another question here. Hi, Doc. My ankle is very painful to the touch, and the area is hot. I cannot walk on it. My veins also hurt when I touch. This has been going on and off for a while. The only thing that is working is Flammar DP tablet. And when it goes back to normal, the area begins to itch. What could be the problem?
So if your ankle is painful to the touch and it's feeling hot, there can be several different causes. So did you consider an ankle sprain, meaning, an ankle sprain can occur through any sort of physical activity. If you hit your foot somewhere, or if you stepped badly on something, and that is usually what happens, is that the ligament around the ankle becomes stretched or torn, and that's usually from some sort of twist or fall or sudden movement. So usually people will get the pain, the swelling, the bruising, and the warmth around the ankle, and it may be very tender to touch. You know, we usually recommend for that rest and ice and compression and elevating the foot as well. And of course, the over-the-counter pain relievers, like the ibuprofen, that can help to manage the pain and reduce the swelling. Or it could even be an ankle fracture. There are so many things that can be that can result in your ankle pain and that tenderness, even tendonitis or gout or some sort of infection as well. I do suggest that if you've been having it for a while, please go and get it checked out and properly assessed. I can't properly assess it because I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what your medical history is. I don't know what medications you're on or what are all your symptoms. So please go and get it checked out properly.
Yeah, checked out. Is there any risk with your blood being too thin?
So when your blood is too thin, that actually puts you at risk for hemorrhaging. And that means that you can bleed profusely, meaning that if your blood is too thin, it typically means that you have an abnormally low ability to clot. And of course, that is going to increase the risk of bleeding, even with minor injuries. And that can lead to the excessive bruising or spontaneous bleeding. And usually what we call that is hypocoagulation. And causes of this could be if you're taking too much of the blood thinners, taking too much aspirin, if you have certain deficiencies like vitamin K, because vitamin K is actually essential for the production of clotting factors in our blood. So a deficiency in vitamin K, that can lead to excessive bleeding as well. Liver disease, if somebody has some sort of bleeding disorder like hemophilia, even excessive alcohol consumption, that can interfere with the liver's ability to produce the clotting factors, because that's where our clotting factors are produced, and that can increase the risk of bleeding. So yes, there are many, many complications that can be associated with the low or low clotting or your blood being too thin.
Right. And how do you know your blood is thin? I mean, does it run differently? How do you actually know your blood is thin?
So you will experience certain symptoms. So if you bruise very easily, so you get unexplained bruises or bruising after very minor trauma. If you have frequent nosebleeds, so nosebleeds that occur easily or last longer than normal. If your gums are bleeding, if you have excessive bleeding from cuts or wounds. So remember I said, if we fall down and scrape our knees, our body's ability to clot is supposed to be normal. So it's supposed to reduce that excessive bleeding from the knee. But if somebody has blood that is too thin, then your ability to clot is no longer there. And even from a minor scrape on the knee, you will be bleeding profusely. If somebody has their menstrual bleeding is excessively heavy and the periods are lasting longer than usual. If somebody is experiencing large or spontaneous bleeding, for example, if they're experiencing bleeding in the brain, that can be very life-threatening. So those are usually the symptoms we look out for, and then we assess the person appropriately to see if they have any sort of bleeding or clotting disorders as well.
Right, so they put some message back. It was clotting. What are the precursors of undesirable clotting? Including clotting.
So the precursors of undesirable clotting, and I'm sure that means what are the signs and the symptoms to look out for when your clotting factors or your clotting is not appropriate. And we actually look at something in the medical system called Virchow's triad. So we look at the stasis of your blood flow. And that means that if you have some sort of reduced or stagnant blood flow, that can lead to clot formation. So this is often seen when you have like the prolonged immobility, the bed rest, the long flights, the surgeries, if you have heart failures or arrhythmias as well. And then we look at, do you have any sort of precursors to damage to the linings of your blood vessels? And that can be in cases of trauma or surgery or inflammations or infections or even plaque buildup because of atherosclerosis. And then we also have to look at, are there any conditions in this person where the blood has an increased tendency to clot? So certain genetic disorders and certain acquired conditions like cancer or pregnancy.
All right, we just have about 2 minutes. And finally, as we wrap it up, Dr. Dean, in terms of clotting, what advice do you have for someone who suspects they may have a blood clot or at risk for one?
So if you suspect that you have a blood clot, it is imperative that you seek your medical attention very promptly. So the symptoms like the unexplained swelling, pain in the leg, shortness of breath, chest pain, that should never be ignored. And early diagnosis and treatment can prevent serious complications like a pulmonary embolism. So you don't want to self-diagnose or wait for symptoms to resolve on their own. For the individuals that are at risk, you know, you need to prevent any sort of ability to clot excessively. You need to discuss your risk care provider, especially if you have a family history of blood clots or conditions like cancer or autoimmune diseases. So simple steps, staying active, wearing your compression stockings during travel, following your prescribed treatments, that can significantly lower your risk. And awareness and prompt action, that can definitely save your life as well.
All right, Doc, thank you very much. Lunchtime Doctor for this week. So enjoy the rest of your week and your weekend.
See you next week.
All right. So, folks, of course, you've been listening to the Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1, and Sky 99.5. Do continue to enjoy the rest of your day. Be safe.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.